Welcome, everybody, to Midday Magazine for this Thursday, December 5th, 2024. I have your host, James J. Mailoff, here, and we're welcoming into the studio our good friend, Jen McNelly, Natural Resource Groundwater Educator with UW-Madison Division of Extension, Wood County. Jen, thanks for being here.
Hi, happy to be here, James.
After that title, we have 2 minutes left.
Right? You could probably squeeze in a few more words, but I'm not sure.
I'm glad we do have some time today, Jen, because we're going to talk a little bit about Wisconsin's water resources and salt.
Yeah.
A topic I don't know that we get a chance to talk about nearly enough.
No, it's one of those things that's kind of, people don't really think about it as a contaminant a lot of times, you know, because salt is a naturally occurring mineral. But for us, it can be a bit pretty big water quality issue. And especially given the time of year and the weather, and we're starting to salt our roads and stuff, it's a great time to start talking about it.
Yeah, we are finally heading into winter. It is go time for winter. Right. Mother Nature has let us know that for sure. And you mentioned some important points about that when regarding salt and the winters. So let's dive into this and what it means for us across Wisconsin here.
Sure. So for most folks are aware that we really have two types of water in the world. We have fresh water and we have salt water. For us in Wisconsin, we are blessed with an abundance of fresh water, which is great because that's the water that we need to survive and drink. And salt water is primarily confined to our oceans for the most part. We absolutely need to use fresh water here in Wisconsin. However, what we're starting to see across the state is we're starting to see increasing levels of salts in our fresh water, not only our surface waters, but also our groundwater. And that can pose some problems for us, both for the aquatic life that live in it, and then also for us who are drinking it as well.
So what happens? How does this happen? Once it dissolves, is it something along those lines? Is it?
Sure. So where does it come from is a great question. So one of the important things about salt is it never goes away. You know, it'll dissolve in water, so we can't physically see it, and it'll travel with that water, but it just doesn't magically disappear over time. And so what happens is those levels actually start to build up and increase over time. We really started using salt in about the 1950s for things like road salting. Mm. It was effective. It was cheap, easy to apply. And so if you consider that we've been using this for 60 plus years,
wow,
it really accumulates, yeah, over time. And that's where we're really kind of starting to see those issues. So there's a few really big sources of salt, mm-hmm, in Wisconsin. Number one, road salt.
Number one, right? On the list. Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
If you drive down the road, you can actually physically see it on the road sometimes, yeah, after they're, yeah, done salting. So road salt is a huge one for us, especially in urban areas. So areas, cities, you know, villages that are out salting their streets. Mm-hmm. That's a big one. Kind of sidewalks falls in that category too. Another one that a lot of people don't think about are water softeners. Mm-hmm. So a lot of us, mm-hmm, use a water softener in our home. We like the way that it makes our water taste and feel, mm-hmm, on our skin. But water softeners use salt. So a water softener is removing minerals like calcium and magnesium that make that water hard. And in order to do that, they use a special resin bead in their water softener that those minerals stick to. Only so many minerals can stick to those resin beads. And so they use a salt brine or a salt water to wash those off. And then those hard water minerals and the salt all gets flushed down your sink, goes to a water treatment plant. And a lot of water treatment plants just don't have the ability or the time or the money to remove that salt. Mm. And so then it's going back in our water resources, mm, or down your septic system. Mm. So those are probably the two biggest sources of salt in Wisconsin. The other one, fertilizers. Mm. So a lot of fertilizers will have a salt component to it that just is part of the process for creating it. We don't have a real great estimate of how much of our salt comes from fertilizers in Wisconsin. In Minnesota, they estimate about 23%. Hmm. But you can imagine in an area where we're you know, where we have more agriculture.
Yeah.
That might be a bigger thing.
It's even though we don't have the numbers, it's good to have that comparison, especially with such a close by state that has right. similar soil and a similar lifestyle, but yeah. not the same. So yeah. you have to think that that number is higher. I'm just throwing that out there. I'm not giving you numbers here, but just the science of it and everything.
It's probably pretty yeah. similar. And then dust suppressants. So folks who live on gravel roads, a lot of times municipalities will use like a sodium chloride mixture to hold down salt or hold down the dust on those gravel roads. Mm-hmm. Luckily, mm. in Wisconsin, we don't have a whole lot of gravel roads because of our dairy industry. And so that one isn't quite as big of a contributor mm-hmm. for us.
So With all these factors, Jen, and before we get into the impacts of salt in mm-hmm. the water, just real quickly, I know we're going to talk about what we can do about this and everything, but it's something that I see all these things that we're talking about here, and I know my fellow human beings out there, we love convenience, and we yes. like things that are, that well, we've always done it this way, and why should we change it, and some of that. Right. And I know my fellow human beings are also tired of hearing of PFAS, and that too. But we have to keep talking about these things, and we have to, because we're kind of, so much of this is what we didn't know then, we know now.
Exactly.
And none of this is necessarily a judgment on that or anything. No. And I think that there becomes a defense mechanism and it kicks into for a lot of people when it comes to that. And that's not what we're – that's there. First, that doesn't do us any good. And two, it's not really about that. We're talking about today and tomorrow. That's what we're focusing on.
Yeah.
And when we're talking about that – and again, we'll get into this more in a moment. Yeah. But do you see us being able to build like a good happy medium here with these things?
Yeah, absolutely. Luckily, when we talk about contaminants, a lot of times it can be very kind of a doom and gloom kind of thing, because you know, things like PFAS, we don't have a great solution for that yet. We're still learning about that one. Right. So when it comes to what the heck do we do about it, boy, that's a tough nut to crack. Mm-hmm. Even nitrates are a tough one. Things like chloride, that's actually kind of an easy one for us because we can find that happy medium between being able to use it and use it smartly in a smart way. Absolutely. This is one of those.
And I appreciate you going off script a little with me there, because it's important, I think, for people to remember that there is a light at the end of the tunnel, that there are things here that we can do to make this not only better for us, but better for our kids, better for the future, while also still, you know, using a lot of these things that we have used for many, many years and everything, decades. And
absolutely. And in the case of chlorides, too, I think it's also important because there is a safety factor here, mm-hmm. especially for us in Wisconsin, where we really do have to use this occasionally. But how can we do it in an intelligent way that, you know, conserves our natural resources, but also allows us, you know, to continue to use it? So.
And part of the reason we're talking about this are the impacts of salt in our water.
Yeah.
And if we can touch on that a little bit, too,
Jen. Yeah. Absolutely. So salt is one of those things that it really doesn't have a human health impact. So we're lucky in that respect. So naturally occurring like chloride, which is an anion of salt, but I'll use salt and chloride interchangeably.
Sure.
So naturally occurring chlorides in water, in drinking water, are about 1 or 2 milligrams per liter is what we would expect to find. So just keep that in the back of your mind. We start to notice a salty taste to our water at about 250 milligrams per liter. So that's where we start to go, wait, something doesn't seem quite right with this. And even then, there really isn't a health impact. It's more of a preference of like what you want your water to taste like. I will caveat by saying people who are on a low sodium diet as prescribed by their doctor may want to just keep that in the back of their mind, because they should be taking their water source into consideration as part of their low sodium diet. So
my father, my parents and my dad deals with that. I wouldn't have thought of that. That's really good
right?
note.
It's not one of those things that you think about, especially people who have a water softener that can artificially increase that chloride level. That's just a good piece of information for folks to have. So not so much a human health concern. Mm-hmm. Where we start to get concerned is really with our aquatic life in our surface waters. Those ones are probably more significantly impacted. And if you think about it, it makes sense because they're adapted to live in freshwater, not saltwater. So when we start raising that salt content, they're like, whoa, wait a minute, something's not right here. Frogs and amphibians are probably the most susceptible to it. And a lot of times they are not going to be found in water over 200 milligrams per liter. And scientists think, you know, we're still trying to figure all of this out. So scientists think that like young or embryos are probably more significantly impacted than adults because their bodily functions that control salts are not yet fully developed. And so that's where we're wondering if there's even a more significant impact there. So the EPA has set some thresholds for folks to be aware of. They're kind of chronic. They're categorized as chronic and toxic. Mm-hmm. And chronic means like you don't want to see the water go above a certain level for really long periods of time. Mm-hmm. And that level is set at 230 milligrams per liter for surface water. So a lot of times based on that aquatic life. Their drinking water recommendation is 20 milligrams per liter. So, mm-hmm. Okay. So significantly lower, but that's because generally groundwater or drinking water is not as heavily impacted as surface waters. So that's why that's lower. So what does it take to get to that level? This is always kind of one of those fun facts for me.
Yeah, right on.
So it only takes about 1 teaspoon of road salt to raise 5 gallons of water above those EPA Whoa. Thresholds. Yeah, so it really does not take Mm-mm. a lot of salt to bring us over Wow. those thresholds that are set by the EPA.
I pre-read this, and I still am shocked by that, Jen. Like, I hope that brings it home. If any of these other stats didn't, I think that one's got to really bring it home to people.
Yeah,
you know?
So 1 teaspoon, 5 gallons, which is just crazy.
And while so much of this is I think I think that this is it's very not very often that we have somebody come in and we're talking about something that literally affects everybody listening. Yeah, everybody's affected by this.
Yeah.
And I'd like to think that in knowing so many of our listeners and so many people out there, I know you guys care about water quality.
Absolutely.
You care about these things. We've got a lot of people that if not every 9.5 out of 10 care about the environment in this state.
Right.
But to anybody who may be hearing this and you've tuned out or you don't necessarily think it may approach you or affect you. We just got done with, from what I could hear, a pretty successful hunting period.
Yeah.
We know that we have plenty of fishermen out there and fishers
Absolutely.
Out there and anglers and everything. And I got a couple of good friends that are big into fishing and stuff. All of this is tied together.
Absolutely.
All of it is tied together. What is happening out of your tap in your living or your kitchen is attached to that water that you're fishing out of. And those deer that you like to hunt, that's where they eat.
Yep.
When we talk about, especially coming out of the last winter we had and everything, our friends up north and so many of our tourism spots around here, how many people are going to want to come here if the water ain't any good?
Or right.
If we don't have any fish in the water or anything like that. This stuff all is tied together.
Yep.
We are all connected, and it is important to pay attention to these things, learn about this stuff so that we have these things to offer next generations and tourists and all that.
For sure.
And when we see these chloride levels surface and go this high, Jen, it's something that's noteworthy too. I appreciate what you mentioned about tasting the salt in the water.
Yeah.
Especially to those that, you know, when it comes to not testing their water or something or keeping up on that.
Yeah.
That can be a test right there.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's one of the reasons that chloride is kind of a nice one to use for us kind of in the scientific community. It's really easy to test for and watch. And so it's a good indicator that if our water resources are being impacted by human uses, because that's where chlorides come from, is from humans. And so, yeah, super easy. In fact, people can actually monitor for chlorides themselves.
Yeah.
It's as easy. There are test strips that are available, and you just dip it in water, and it will give you a chloride level. Isaac Walton League actually has a program for monitoring chlorides for citizen scientists, so people who are out in the community and just want to know, well, what the heck? They can offer those test strips free of cost to you. So check in with the local Isaac Walton League and ask about their chloride monitoring program. It's so super easy to test for and keep your eye on.
I first learned about this, I would say, a long time ago in my 20s. So it was a good 20-some years ago between you and I, Jen. When I first started having fish tanks. You, of course, have to test the water for fish tanks. So you're just putting that little strip in there for a second or two, pulling out, and you see how the water is for your little friends there in the fish tank. It's no different here with your own water, being able to test it. And it's a very simple, easy process to be able to do.
Yeah, absolutely. Exact same process that you would do with a fish tank. That's a great analogy.
We're speaking with Jen McNally, Natural Resource Groundwater Educator with UW-Madison Extension. And Jen, what can we do when it comes to this topic?
Sure. So one of the easiest things to do when it comes to this topic and talk about salt and water is just be aware. Be aware of how much salt you're applying and when you're applying it. So, try and ratchet back on your salt that you're applying. Use as little as possible. If you can use an alternative like sand or mix the two, because that'll stretch your salt farther, that's a great way to do it. Wisconsin is really lucky. There is an amazing resource out there, a program called Wisconsin Saltwise. If you Google it, it'll show right up. But they've got a phenomenal website with all sorts of different resources. In fact, there's even a training program for professionals who do like winter snow removal and stuff and are salting sidewalks professionally. They can be trained on how to apply salt smartly to these resources and get a certification in it. So phenomenal resource. They have podcasts, fact sheets, all sorts of different things. So really, the big one is just being aware of how much we're using. For folks who have a water softener, you can actually, there's worksheets out there that you can use to kind of adjust your water softener to make sure it's using the minimum amount of salt necessary. Or you can look at using a water conditioner instead of a softener, which doesn't require any salt, but achieves the same end there. And then we talked about the monitoring as well. So those are all great things that people can do in their own backyard, essentially.
I think you bring up a really good point with the sand, too. That's one, and it's something that a lot of people can do, and it's not an expensive thing to be able to do. And a great point, too, about mixing it with the salt. Yeah. And the fact that nowadays we do have other resources, we do have other options, as you mentioned there, that don't bring any salt into this.
Yeah, and that's a great point too, James, is that salt is starting to become really expensive. Yeah. It's a major cost for our cities and, who are applying it to our roadways too. So they're always looking for ways to reduce just from an economic standpoint. Mm-hmm. In fact, today there was a great news article out there about using cheese whey on streets. So Greene County down in southern Wisconsin is using cheese whey as part of their de-icing program. So yeah, all sorts of new alternatives are coming out every single day.
Yeah, and it's wonderful to hear, and a credit to the not only the scientific community, but to community members and individuals out there thinking of these things and looking for different ways to do it. And if people are curious about what chloride or salt levels that are might be in their area or in their homes, are there resources that they can go to?
Yeah, sure. So good one is Saltwise actually has a map of chloride levels in Wisconsin. So that's a great one to go visit. You can always get your water tested through a water lab if you want to know specifically what's coming out of your tap. Or you can reach out to professionals such as myself as well and ask questions.
And we'll give you the Jen's information before we wrap up on that. I do want to give a big shout out to all these organizations and different groups that not only we've talked about today, Jen, but different times that we've talked with the Extension members about our water quality and the different organizations out there that are working so hard on this. So much of our ag industry that is trying so hard to work with our communities and the all kinds of different organizations to figure out how can we make this work. And all of this and this whole conversation, the great information, the great stats you brought us, all of that is noteworthy. I hope one thing that also people are coming out of this with is this is something we can do something about. This is something that we can fix, that we can make better. So many times, as you touched on, these topics can seem so overwhelming.
Yeah.
And we're talking about something that is literally a fluid situation in water. It's a very fluid situation. So it's understandable that we are learning as we go with some of these things.
Yeah.
And we're also doing, so many people are doing the best that they can with this topic.
Absolutely. You know, people think, oh, water, we should have known so much about this.
Yeah.
Water science is actually a relatively new topic in the grand scheme of like world history. So yeah, we are absolutely still learning and finding solutions.
I could spend an hour talking with you just about that. Just right? About how we, why are we so late to this?
Topic for next time,
absolutely,
right?
Absolutely, yeah, yeah. And a great conversation again. Just one more time, wanted to mention a couple of websites. That is wisaltwise.com. It's a fantastic website. I did not know about it until I saw your notes, yeah. And I really appreciate it. My dad loves that site now.
Great resource.
He's got it bookmarked and everything. So
fantastic.
That is wisaltwise.com. And the UW Extension site is extension.wisc.edu, extension.wisc.edu. And Jen, if people have follow-up questions for you specifically, how can they reach you?
You know, they can go to that website and find my telephone number or email address, either one. Happy to answer questions all the time.
Really appreciate the time. And keep in mind that not only with this conversation, but other conversations with our friends from UW Extension, you can find them all at civicmedia.us. Just go under shows and look for the Extension logo or our label with that and all the great conversations we have with our team over there. Say hi to everybody Extension for us.
Will certainly do that.
Thanks for the time. Oh, and have a happy holiday, Jen.
Thank you. You too, James.
You guys, I apologize. I'm going off script here again for a second because I wanted to bring this up right away and I almost forgot. Jen has the most amazing earrings. Most holiday earrings. They're awesome. I love those Snoopy earrings. They're great.
Thank you.
Thank you for joining us, Jen. We appreciate the
You're
time.
Welcome.
We'll have more Midday Magazine for you tomorrow right here at 97.5 FM, 1320 AM, WFHR. We are locally grown radio.